is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We've got pro days, we've got win totals, we've got news and new rules trickling out of the NFL owners' meetings. This is a league that has no idea what an offseason is, and neither do we as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. How are we doing today, Michael?
Offseason? What are you talking about, Stormy? Off-season. There is no off in that season. It's all just one, well, maybe July. Maybe we'll have a little bit in June, 15th to the 15th, right? But, God, we love it. Isn't it great? I mean, isn't it just tremendous that we're able to get excited about some guy running a 40 down in Baton Rouge, and he ran 4.35, and, of course, naturally, Elliott, he wants to dismiss it as not counting as much as the combine because he's not going to be a Colt, you know? He's going to be on another team. So I love it. It's so good. It's good to be here, you know? Excited for the Final Four this week, the tournament this weekend, excited for the women. I mean, there's a lot going on, Stormy.
Yes, no question. And to set the table, as you did there, for the rest of the show, while this is an NFL focus, we got lots of college hoops that we're going to get into as well with the Sweet 16 kicking off tomorrow. We got Adam Burke joining us in a half an hour, VSiN managing editor. Get some of his game previews. Former head coach turned college basketball analyst now at ESPN, Tom Crean, is going to stop by an hour or two. And our good friend and handicapper, Harry Gagnon of the Against All Odds podcast, also coming up in hour two. But let's start with that pro day you mentioned in Baton Rouge, because we're less than a month away from the first round of the draft coming up on April 25th. Pro days all over the place. We got LSU today, North Carolina, and Washington tomorrow. So while we get to see Jaden Daniels today, we get Drake May and Michael Penix Jr. coming up very soon. J.J. McCarthy had the best pro day ever, though, for a quarterback. So we got a high bar here. Before we get to Malik Nabers, I want to say Jaden Daniels, since the big question mark about him coming in was the measurements. He's got that slimmer frame. He officially weighed in and measured in 6'3", 210 pounds, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, look, the smallest quarterback in the draft last year was the one who didn't get hurt. So all this really comes down to who's quick-minded, what do you do with the ball, and obviously he's going to have to protect himself, there's no question. But, you know, at 6'3", 210, and he's an older player, so you feel like there will be a little bit more girth and added to it. You know, I think he certainly has the tape to back it up. I do believe, Stormy, when you keep watching these quarterbacks play, there is a gap, right? There's a gap between Williams, and then there's a gap between Daniels, and then May, and then Nix and McCarthy. And I think you got to figure out those gaps, and you have to figure out as an executive, you know, where does this guy fit as it relates to the other players in the league? Because, you know, when you draft Kenny Pickett, you obviously said, you know, you're saying when you turn that card in, he's going to be in the top 10 of his position because that's what you need him to be. And when he isn't, it's going to be a blown pick. And like I've mentioned, you know, there have been 66 quarterbacks drafted in the first round, not counting last year, and 37 of them have been failures. So the success rate isn't good.
Yeah, and I did think that was interesting what you mentioned in terms of frame, because you're dead on. Bryce Young last year ended up being the only rookie quarterback that played the entire season, and that's despite him being the second most sacked quarterback in all of the NFL behind that bad offensive line. So you're looking at not just that, but a lot of other factors here. What are you most interested to see coming out of Jaden Daniels' pro day today, aside from the measurements?
Well, I just think how he handles himself. You know, his tape is really good. Now, he's throwing the ball to really good receivers. We get that, right? And so the offense was good. The defense couldn't play. But I think, you know, one of the things you knew about him at Arizona State was when he was well-coached at Arizona State, I think before he transferred, he was good. It's interesting. This draft is so funny, Stormy, because three of the top six quarterbacks all transferred. Three of the top six quarterbacks in this draft all were successful before they transferred. Three of the top six quarterbacks transferred, okay, after they had bad years. Now, Caleb Williams transferred as well, but he was good at Oklahoma and he was good at USC. So that's four that transferred. But for me, I think the ones that what we've learned about Nix, what we've learned about Daniels, and what we've learned about Penix is when they had the right coaching, they really look good. When they weren't coached very well, they did not look good. Is that a reflection on them as players, or is that a reflection of them as their coach? And I think the latter, because when Daniels comes to LSU, right? Yeah. He was sensational. When Nix goes to Oregon, he was really good. And when Penix reunited with Caden DeBoard, he became all of a sudden really good.
Yeah, with Jaden Daniels specifically, it is interesting just going through his collegiate career. It's like every single year he did improve and get better as he went, capped, of course, by a 50-total touchdown season and a Heisman Trophy there. But it reminded me kind of Jalen Hurts, maybe not this past season, obviously, but every other year from college into those first couple seasons in the NFL, like he was just consistently improving. So I wonder if that's something that we continue to see from a guy like Jaden Daniels. Yeah. Something you pointed out, though, is that at this pro day, he's going to be throwing to two of the best wide receivers in this draft, and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. Of the 40 touchdown passes he threw this year, 31 of them went to those two guys. Drake May's not going to have that. And so I do want to make that distinction with Drake May, because he's getting knocked so much right now for a number of different things, but he is 2 years younger, so the development and experience is less. He doesn't have the weapons and the talent around him that some of these other quarterbacks have had. And Drake May is somebody that I'm very eager and excited to see what he's like as a pro. So I wonder how much you measure the on-field production and tape and what we've seen versus the projection. Like, how challenging is that as a scout to figure out what's the most valuable?
Well, you've got to project him forward. Because remember, let's go back, Joe Burrow. You know, he didn't even get a red jersey for a quarterback from Urban Meyer when he was at Ohio State. They hit him because he was the scout team quarterback, and they hit him no matter what happened. And he was never had a chance to compete. Dwayne Haskins was the starter because he was a five-star, and Burrow had a transfer. And when Burrow transferred to LSU, nobody was thinking he was going to be the first pick overall, or Joey Burrow, or like Joe Montana. So I think you've got to allow for some of this, right? And I think your point about May is well taken. He's 6'4", he's 230 pounds, he's going to get bigger, he's going to get stronger, and he's a great kid. And he's going to improve, and you've got to measure the improvement. You've got to ask yourself on a continual basis, if we take this kid, what's the downside? What's the worst he's going to be? And what's the best he's going to be, right? And let's not live in dreamland. Let's live in reality. If we get this kid to do X, Y, and Z, he'll be a really good player and we can win with him. If we don't, where are we left with? Those are the questions that you have to constantly ask yourself. And what's going on now is everybody's just slotting him in. Well, he's going to, you know, they're going to go here. And you and I both know from what we talked about yesterday, the odds are going to continue to move around based on lack of information, if nothing else, because it's not reliable.
Racing sit right now, Jaden Daniels, a minus 125 odds on favorite to go number 2 overall. Drake May, minus 125 to go number 3. We'll get back to the quarterbacks in a little bit in our next segment. But for now, let's head out to some of the sound that has come out of Orlando in the NFL owners meetings. Commissioner Roger Goodell had to answer some questions about some of the new rules and tweaks heading into 2024. Here's Goodell on the new kickoff model.
I think we're still going to have to tinker with it. I think it's one of those things when you get it in play, you look at things and you will reevaluate that as the season's going on. And if it's appropriate to make changes in the future, we will. So I think it'll be a big improvement. I think it will bring the play back into, a relevant play, an important play, and an exciting play. And I think we can do it where the injury rate hopefully will drop.
Hearing that and having 24 hours now to sit on the change, Michael, has your opinion changed or altered at all since yesterday?
No, actually, it's gotten stronger because I keep thinking about all the times you might want to employ, and maybe it's twice a year at the most, an onside kick. Maybe you want to catch somebody off guard, and you've removed that. Now that's no longer in the strategy of the game. Maybe you're getting ready to go play a team that you're David and they're Goliath, and you want to be able to find a way to win the game with an onside kick or something that happens. And, you know, the rules have prohibited you from doing that. So I don't really like it. And the more I watch the tape of it, you know, I'm not sure that it's going to cut down on injuries. There's still, you know, there's still violent collisions in a 5-yard area. Let's be clear. And most of the time when you're sprinting to cover a kick, you're under control. You're under control. They've eliminated the blindside block, which was important. That was a lot of injuries and concussions. But to me, I'm not sure. I think it's going to be too much of a cluster. I appreciate what Goodell said about we're going to look it over, because I think it could be too gimmicky for me. And when you remove something that could help a team get back into the game, then I think, you know, now all of a sudden, are we really the NFL or are we another league trying to get noticed?
Yeah, and I think that that's great that he said that it's going to be continued to be tweaked. Just because this is what the rule is that they have set now, they are leaving themselves opportunities to adjust and to change that as necessary. Dan Campbell had an interesting comment saying that this new kickoff has a lot of people spooked because of the unknown of it, but that excites him that he and his special teams coordinator Dave Phipp have already been studying the XFL version, discussing what types of body types and athletes that they should be finding that'll be useful in that new scheme. Speaking to that, on the day that they changed the kickoff, the Steelers signed Cordarrelle Patterson to a 2-year, $6 million deal. He's returned 9 kicks for touchdowns, 3 times as many kick return touchdowns as any player since entering the league in 2013. What did you make of that signing?
I thought Patterson was hurt last year, right? And I think Patterson's one of those guys like LaVisca Chenault down at Carolina who hasn't signed with anybody who's hard to tackle. I think anytime you can add a guy to your team that's hard to tackle, you should do it. And I'm surprised he got this good of a deal from them because this is a little late to get almost a $4 million a year deal or over $4 million a year. But I like it. I think it's a great change of pace. They've got Warren. They got Harris. Now they've got Patterson. They can move Patterson around. Look, this Steeler team, if they get that offensive line to continue to play well, this Steeler team is going to be much better. And we know this too, Stormy. When T.J. Watt's on the field for them, they're a much better defense.
Yeah, and Patrick Queen, a great addition to the defense as well. The Steelers have only had one kickoff run back for a touchdown since 2017. It's an area they've struggled in, so hopefully Patterson can be an upgrade as he reunites with his former coach on the offense in Arthur Smith. We're going to hit the break. When we return, Michael and I continue to talk quarterbacks and the value or lack thereof when it comes to mock drafts.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The Lombardi Line coming to you from coast to coast. Michael's out there at his office in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Now, we mentioned before the break the Cordarrelle Patterson signing in Pittsburgh, Michael, which you said you liked. Another deal got inked yesterday as well. Former Bills All-Pro corner Tre'Davious White intends to sign a 1-year, $8.5 million deal with the Rams, max value up to 10. What was your initial thought when you heard?
Well, you know, we hope he's healthy. And I think that's the big thing. Whenever you sign a guy coming off an ACL that relies on, you know, speed and vertical play, you're always a little hesitant to sign off on it. But obviously the Rams feel like he can come back. They're going to need this because, let's face it, as good as the Rams play defensively, they can't play the same way because they don't have a guy on the field any longer that dominates double coverage, that makes the offense have to slide the protection. You're not going to replace Aaron Donald. But, you know, you're trying to improve your overall team defense. I think a lot of this is wait and see, especially when you sign someone coming off a major injury like White had.
29 years old, tore his ACL in 2021, returned for 6 regular season games and 2 playoff games in 2022 before tearing his right Achilles this past season, 4 games in. So an injury he continues to rehab right now. But as you mentioned, you know, very talented guy when healthy. Also, just while we wrap up the Rams here, Les Snead said that Stetson Bennett is set to return for offseason workouts, Michael. Back. So still don't know where he was, where he's been, but he's coming back.
Yeah, nobody knows. Nobody knows. But I think this, Stormy, I think the Rams could be a sleeper team to pick a quarterback. You know,
really?
Because this is the perfect time for them to do it, right? Stafford's still playing well. Can he keep going for 2 more years? Maybe. But if they could grab somebody they like, and maybe it's not going to be in the first round, but I got a feeling they're going to draft one because they know they need a young quarterback. Garoppolo's going to be suspended for the first 2 games of the year. They're going to need somebody to fill in. Is it Stetson Bennett? I don't know if they could trust Stetson Bennett the way he went off the rails last year.
As far as the first round goes, taking somebody on the D-line is a -125 favorite at DraftKings, 25-1 for them to have a quarterback with their first pick in this year's draft. So if you think that's a reality, hot odds there in the QB room for Los Angeles. And because we're talking quarterbacks in general, Michael, you have an article up on VSiN.com right now called Drafting Quarterbacks is a Risky Business, which I think is something we all can agree to be true. But why is that the case? Why is it so challenging to get the most important position on the field right for these teams?
because there's so many variables in it, right? And we're and you would think now, you know, Stormy, before you were born and I got into scouting, and it was a wishbone college era, and it was the option, and nobody threw the football, and Troy Aikman transferred before transferring was popular, because he went to Oklahoma and was disappointed they didn't change the offense from the veer into a passing game, like Barry Switzer was going to do that, right? So he transfers to UCLA, and it has to sit out a year and all that. So, you know, then when we were drafting quarterbacks, the players weren't really ready, or they weren't throwing. They didn't have summer leagues. They didn't have seven-on-seven camps. They didn't have all the passing that we see today. And yet the development is still takes forever, because the reality of it is you're trying to find somebody to understand what his strengths are, what his weaknesses, and how that fits within the framework of the offense that you're asking him to do, and how well. Just look at Mac Jones, coached by Josh McDaniels that one year, played well, still turned the ball over too much. McDaniels couldn't fix everything in one year, but he loses McDaniels, and all of a sudden now he's down in a scrap heap. Let's look at Penix. You know, he loses Kalen DeBoer to Fresno State, and all of a sudden Indiana's not the same, and he's not the same. So it's the marriage of the draft with the coach is really important, and that's hard to get connectivity to. And that's why I think it's difficult, because no one asks the question, what are we going to run if we draft him? Who are we going to become if we select J.J. McCarthy in the first round? What type of offense do we need to run, and what kind of team are we going to have? Everybody just says, well, he's going to make us better. Well, that doesn't work, because as we know, 37 of the last 66 quarterbacks picked in the first round are not playing on teams.
When we hear all the time, like, a team's fallen in love with this guy, or this player is rising, like, those are things that we hear all the time when it comes to the draft. From a scouting perspective, what are things that you can do to avoid certain pitfalls with players at the quarterback position? Like, how tough is that to identify in such a short amount of time as you try to decide the future for your franchise?
Well, I think you really got to connect with the player, and you got to feel like the player connects with his teammates there. All the evidence is really there. The best thing to do is to watch the flow of the game. Watch the game tape, right? You know, when you watch McCarthy, you know, he was selfless. You know, he didn't throw a pass in Penn State in the second half, Ohio State. You know, none of the games that they won, they relied on McCarthy to win, right? And so there's always like, well, why didn't they do that? You know, so I think to me, can he connect with his teammates? Can he make key plays at key times? One of the things that makes McCarthy so good is he's really good on third down. He's been very good at executing on third down. And so that gives you a sense that, okay, he's got this. So it's a lot of really understanding what goes into what you need to have to be successful. And then you got to have enough skill set. Look, you know, Bo Nix at Auburn was not good, but he goes to Oregon, he's really good. When you're watching Bo, let's say Bo Nix and Brock Purdy. When Brock Purdy was coming out of Iowa State, everybody said he was a good player. He's just too small, doesn't have enough arm, right? But he understands how to play the game. True, doesn't get picked until the last pick in the seventh round. Well, Bo Nix is a bigger version of Purdy, right? He's a bigger version. He has athleticism. You know, he understands how to play the game. And when he's in a system that highlights him, he can play effectively. Will he be a top 10 player at his position? I think a lot of that's going to depend on who drafts them, right? Can they highlight a skill set? I think, again, that depends on how they get drafted. So it's easy for the mockers to say, I don't like this guy, because they're not putting him into a system. And so that's why we hear the verbiage, they're moving up, because the system is not attached to any player. And once you attach a system that he fits, like watching Bo Nix yesterday, I was watching, like, he fits what Sean Payton wants to do offensively. I could see it in the tape. You know, is he a top five player at his position? I doubt it. If I were grading him, could I say he's a potential starter? Without a doubt. Could I say he's a day one starter? Probably hard for me to do that. And that's how you have to look at it.
Bo Nix, one of my favorite players, honestly, getting a chance to cover him. Really, really great person, great kid. Finishes his career as the NCAA all-time leading passer. A couple great quotes, Michael. And I don't know how you are as a writer, how you feel about people reading your own words back to you, but I'm going to do that here real quickly. A couple great ones from the article, again, up at VSiN.com right now. When there's a huge need at a position, a team's eyes get big. They act as if they found gold in the Sierra Mountains, and all they have to do is excavate their fortune. As in 1849, turning dirt into gold is harder than it looks, and today, turning a college quarterback into a star is hard. NFL teams are blinded by their dream of finally solving the problem. Like, that is so, just so pointed and so right on with what's happening in the NFL.
Yeah. It's fool's gold. Just like, you know, as I wrote later, you know, the only people that made out on the gold rush were the people selling picks and shovels. You know,
yep.
Everybody else was, you know, everybody else failed. So, like, we just have a sense. We want it to be good. We want it to be good. And, you know, and I go back to it. There's a great scene in The Hunt for Bin Laden when the Jessica Chastain character says to the other guy, when she's trying to prove something to him, and he says, "You're telling me you want this to be true." "Yes, I want this to be true." We all want it to be true that this guy's going to be a good player. And so when we feel like we've had enough data to say that, we stop and we don't look beyond and we don't ask the second questions that we have to ask.
And in this year's draft, especially because of the volume of quarterbacks that are considered to be really high caliber, high potential players, there's more intrigue in this draft at the position than most. And with that, we talked about it a lot yesterday, the odds movement on J.J. McCarthy specifically, who goes from 18-1 2 days ago to now sitting plus 275 to be the number two overall selection in the draft, based on some comments that we hear, the rave reviews from his former head coach in Jim Harbaugh, the comments from Tom Pelissero about, you know, people that know Adam Peters really well and what he might think and what he might want to do. ESPN Commanders reporter John Keim tweeted, "Dan Quinn said he's just now getting into draft work. Said if anyone thinks they know it, the Commanders are going to do it too. They don't really know." Quote, "Adam and I aren't there yet." That quote coming from Dan Quinn. Right now, that quarterback room is Marcus Mariota and Jake Fromm. We know that they're going to pick a quarterback, but who will it be? Can you glean anything from that comment from Dan Quinn, or is it just lying season all over again?
Well, I mean, like, how can that not be? I mean, if you're the head coach of the team, I want to know what you want at quarterback. I want you to, in the interview, to tell me exactly what you think wins in the league. That's part of getting the job. So just because you two haven't watched tape together doesn't mean you don't know that. Like, I want to be able to go scout and say, this is the player that fits what we want to do perfectly. And you hired Cliff Kingsbury. So you've got two people that now need to answer. And how is this going to affect? This is why we have such a breakdown in trying to evaluate quarterbacks. Exactly what Quinn said is the wrong methodology. Like, we're trying to find something that builds our program around the skill set that we want. That's the most important thing. And yet we're talking about, we haven't talked about it. Why? That there's a lack of communication. Aren't you in the same building together?
Yeah. Commanders currently in that number two overall spot. Jane Daniels, minus 125 favorite to go to. Drake May, plus 150. And McCarthy, as I referenced, plus 275. We're going to hit the commercial real quickly here on the other side of the break. The Sweet 16 is growing less sweet by the day for this team. Why VSiN's Adam Burke says, fade away. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite. All at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find when you head to Total Wine and More. Please drink responsibly. Must be 21. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line on VSiN and DraftKings Network. Let's turn our attention to a little bit of the madness as the Sweet 16 gets underway tomorrow. Tom Crean, ESPN college basketball analyst, former head coach, has multiple Big Ten titles with Indiana, brought Marquette to a Final Four. He joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. And Coach, let's start with your former team who finds themselves in the Sweet 16. What is the ceiling for Marquette this year?
Oh, I think it's good. I think they're going to have to really have a great plan on DJ Burns on Friday night. And he catches the ball so wide. I mean, he can really post up anywhere, start his post up anywhere from 20, 18 feet out. So if you go right away when he catches it, he's going to pick you apart with passing. If you go too late, he's going to beat you on the move with his strength and his quickness. I think you have to really determine. And a lot of it has to, this, you have to go off the, when he starts putting the ball down on the ground on the dribble. And what I've seen with most of these teams that have faced him the last few weeks is nobody sticks out their game plan. Like they do it a little bit and then they get away from it. They do it a little bit, then they get away from it. You might have to change up your game plan, but you better have a game plan on him. And I see too much of just allowing a kid that's that quick, that strong, that nimble, and that good a touch and passer to be able to play. So he really is the controller of the game. They play really hard at NC State. They shoot it. They drive it. But I think Marquette is built for this now. I'm not sure anybody's beaten Houston in that bracket after being in Memphis this past weekend, covering those games for Westwood One. But Marquette can beat them because they can get up and down the floor. They can pass. They can really, really put you into problems with their two-man game because they have so many guys that can start their offense. And it's going to be a real issue for NC State to have to guard Marquette's five-man, Oso Iguodaro, because he can do so much off the drive, and he's got as good a pull-up floater game as any big man in the country. So I like Marquette in that, but they got to have a real plan on DJ Burns, and they've got to do a great job of stopping the drives of the NC State guards.
You know, you mentioned Houston, Coach, and Sheed was incredible in the game against A&M, and Houston looks healthy and ready to go. But I thought the last two games, Duke has taken their game to another level, and they look like they're probably playing their best basketball. But you still think Houston's too much to take in the game?
Yeah, absolutely. Vermont and James Madison are really good in their leagues. They earned their way into that tournament, but they're not physical, aggressive, get-at-you teams. And really, Duke's offense was really good. I mean, really good, but it's still the same issues that Duke has during the year, getting beat on the two-man game, the ball screen game, I mean, the two-man game in the middle of the floor, getting driven, long closeouts. Those things were still there. I mean, Duke was just too good offensively. And if Duke can score those kind of points against Houston, they'll win the national championship, because then that means that they are ridiculously good. But I don't think anybody can score those kind of points. Buzz Williams had a tremendous game plan against Houston and not wanting to face that set defense the whole game. And he really, it's something he said in our meetings, that they really started to look at changing how they played. They'd lost five games in a row. And then they were 6-1 going into that game the other night with Houston, and they started to really try to score in the first 6 to 10 seconds of the clock. And they were really good at it. You know, they went to the foul line. Really, if A&M makes their free throws, it's a different game. But Houston, you're not beating them. It's almost like you have to kill them, and I don't think you can. I mean, they're not going to lose the game for you. Right. So when I say you can't just beat them, you got to be really, really good. And they are so tough minded. I mean, they had a walk on come in and make a free throw at the end of the game. They brought Ramon Walker Jr. back, who most felt wasn't even going to get back this year after missing 9 games. And he's instrumental at the end of the game. So there's something about that Houston group, and all those guys fouled out in the game, but they still had guys that made plays. And I think there's just something about that culture that's ingrained. Those guys believe. They trust one another. I don't think they're really that healthy. The Tugler kid, if he'd have played the full year, he might be a top 20 pick. And they miss him. I think Juwan Roberts is still not healthy. He's out there like he's a walking MASH unit, but he just kills you. I mean, he's so tough around the rim. He's got an incredible left hand. I like Houston a lot. I mean, it's going to take an incredible effort from somebody to beat them.
That's really great insight. Houston, a 4-point favorite in this game against Duke, total 134.5. And we actually asked a guest yesterday on the program. I was questioning Houston's depth because of the situation that they were in against Texas A&M. And he echoed a lot of those thoughts about their toughness and the way that their minds are, that actually gave him more confidence in Houston moving forward, showing that they could still escape that win the way that they did with 4 guys fouled out. Tom Crean joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line on the Lombardi Line. Now, I mentioned off the top, of course, you took Marquette to their last Final Four. You know what it takes to get through these rounds. How tough is it ultimately to get through the Sweet 16, to get through the Elite Eight, and which teams do you really feel like are built to get there remaining?
Well, it's funny, when we were at Marquette, I just saw on Twitter earlier that this is an anniversary of when we beat Pitt in the Sweet 16. We beat them by 3, and to give you an example of how hard it is, we had Dwayne Wade. He either assisted or scored on 15 of 19 possessions from the end of the first half to the beginning of the second, or through the early parts of the second half, and we won the game by 3. That's how hard it is. I mean, you have got to be so tough-minded And again, I look at A&M the other night. They make the free throws. They probably win the game. And because they missed so many free throws throughout the game. And the bottom line is you got to get to the foul line. We talked about that last time we were on. The getting to the foul line, the free throw percentage is huge. All that carries over. I think what carries over is you've got to get to the foul line. You've got to be able to rebound the ball. There's no question you've got to have shooters on your team that can space and play. Like Houston, their weakness is their depth, but their strength is the every individual that comes into that game knows that they can impact the game. And so so it almost offsets the lack that they don't have as much depth as what they had. But you've got to have that. You've got to have – I remember this when we went to the Final Four. We had four wins. We beat Holy Cross. We beat Missouri in overtime. We beat Pitt. We beat Kentucky. We had a different freshman. We only had four freshmen. But we had a different freshman be instrumental in all four of those games. And it might be one player like Steve Novak going 3-for-3 from three in an overtime against Missouri. It might be another player like Joe Chapman having – a couple quick buckets when you sub. You can't have wasted possessions in these games. And being around this from a courtside view, watching the practices the last couple of days, you're not out coaching anybody. So you better make darn sure that you've got a great staff and that you've got answers to a lot of things and you don't have an emotional group of coaches and an emotional group of players. It's like Auburn. Auburn could have been a Final Four team, but the kid that got thrown out of the game 3 minutes into the game, he became their most important player during the year. His name is Chad Baker Mazzara. And he wasn't maybe their best player. He wasn't their highest-rated recruit, but he was their most important player because he could get so many different things done. You have one of those moments, and all of a sudden you're out. And so I think those things become really, really hard in this. The rest is easier. You got to do a great job of making sure that the day between games and then when you get ready to play your next game in the Elite Eight, that you are absolutely rested. I saw fatigue hit this, but the bottom line, guys, is this. You got to have a tough-minded team that will not be impacted by missing shots. They've got to keep playing. I saw so many guys get their heads down and lose some energy because the ball wasn't going in for them. It's not going to go in for you at this level like this. Now, it's too tough. You got to be able to keep playing and then get back in and find something to go your way offensively. But you cannot rely on your offense to win.
Coach, real quick, we got about a minute left. Can anybody besides Houston beat UConn?
Tennessee-Purdue winner, maybe. I think that'll be a great game. I think the Purdue guards are going to be really tested this weekend. I think, and I'm not sure Purdue has a guy that can really get into Dalton Connect. Texas did as good a job as anybody on Dalton Connect because they just went in and were physical with him the whole time. But I'd have to say probably no. I just still think UConn is far and away. And if they get by Iowa State or Illinois, it's going to be hard to beat them.
Coach Crean, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you.
Anytime. Thank you.
That's Tom Crean,
Coach,
joining us on the Progressive Guest Line.
And great job.
And awesome insight, as always, from somebody who has been there and done that. But what I really gleaned from that last answer is that my Aztecs, Michael, have no hope this week.
You took it personally, don't it?
I can't help it. It is what it is. More college hoops talk on the other side of the break with former sportsbook supervisor and Against All Odds host Harry Gagnon. But get excited as well for MLB futures. Why Harry is not concerned about the Shohei Ohtani scandal when it comes to his NL MVP bet. We'll be right back.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every 1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now and use our code Lombardi when you sign up. Again, that gets you a $500 bonus bet for every 1,000 you wager right now.
Question
maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
We're closing things out the only way we know how on a Why Not Wednesday. Michael and I looking at some long shot props and seeing if it can make you tilt your head and say, why not? I'll fire on that. And I swear our producer, Elliot Bowman, is trying to torture me today as the first Why Not Wednesday.
I see this.
It's so cruel. The first Why Not Wednesday candidate we have. San Diego State, Michael. Can they beat the defending champion, UConn Huskies, in a repeat of last year's title game, plus 455? I know I can't, but can you say why not?
I can't say why not to that. I mean, that's why I asked Coach Crean the question. Can anybody? Now, Crean, you know, like Crean gave me a different point of view on Houston. And he covered the game. He was talking about Buzz and all the things that they did. And, you know, Houston's only lost four games. So maybe this will be Connecticut-Houston to get to the finals. I don't know. But it isn't going to be Sandy. I can't see San Diego State having enough to do it for 40 minutes, Stormy. You won't get me there, and I feel bad. You wouldn't even go there. Elliot, you know, why wouldn't he put Purdue in here? Because he doesn't want to hear that answer. He wants to torture you, Stormy.
He doesn't want to hear the truth. I see how it is. It's fine. But no, I'm right there. And San Diego State had a great shooting performance against Yale. Over 50% from three. They had 13 made three-pointers in that game, Michael. 85 points. That's not what they do. That's not going to happen again against UConn. It's unfortunate. They also, you think about the travel. They had to go back to San Diego, now out to Boston, where it's a virtual home game for UConn, too. I don't know about the 11. I would bet UConn before I would bet San Diego State, though, even with the points. Just throwing that out there, unfortunately. Let's hit this next one, Michael. Right now, it doesn't appear that this is a running back class with first-round grades. But at a 10-1 prop, do we think that a single running back could float their way into the top 32 picks? What do you think? Could you say why not?
No way. I think the running backs have been taken care of in the free agency. I think everybody kind of settled them down, got the guy that they want. There's teams that still need a running back, no question. But I don't think the value is going to be to spend one there in the first round. And I just don't see any of them having first round grades, whether it's Benson, whether it's Brooke, whether it's Shipley at Clemson. All those seem more like potential starters, which indicate more in the second round. So you're not getting me there. Elliot's 0 for 2 so far today.
Minus 2,000 on the no for a running back to be drafted. Jonathan Brooks, a plus 225 favorite to be the first running back selected, but I don't think anybody sees that happening in the first round. Let's go back to college basketball. NC State, Michael, the lone remaining double-digit seed in the field, getting set to take the court in the Sweet 16. But can they do it for two more games? NC State 13-1 to make the Final Four. Could you say why not?
Well, no, I couldn't. You couldn't get me on this one either because, look, I think Marquette's going to be a tough opponent for them. And then, you know, they've got to get to the next one to get to the...
Winner of Houston Duke.
Yeah, and then to me, what Coach Crean, now I know he's the ex-Marquette coach, but what he said about Marquette was enlightening to me, and it gave me a different perspective on Marquette. Everybody, you know, has kind of been up and down on Marquette. I thought they played better in the second half. So, I can't see NC State making it to the Final Four. Although, you know, the big fella in the middle is pretty good, and if they have lights out shooting, but two games against two really good teams, I don't see it.
That Burns kid, he's my Cinderella.
Perfectly.
I just want him to keep going. He's so much fun to watch. In the NFL, we learned yesterday that Dak Prescott is in another prove it year deal type situation. Could you say why not to a 5,000-plus yard passing season for Dak Prescott with it all on the line to make the big bucks in Dallas?
0 for 4. No way. I mean, if he's throwing for 5,000 yards with that line, I mean, right now they don't have – I mean, unless they move Tyler Smith to left tackle, which is probably what they're going to have to do. The line isn't very good. And when you go on the road like they've had to go on the road and they haven't been able to produce, beat good teams on the road, no. Look, I think they're not as talented. I love CeeDee Lamb. They don't have a running back on their team right now. Maybe it's Deuce Vaughn, and he's dynamic, right? Maybe he'll become their guy. And it could be because we've seen him do it in college, but 5,000 yards, yeah. I don't see it, Stormy.
12-1 is a fun number to look at, but is it reality to get to 5,000? He led the league in passing yards this past season with 4,516. The closest he has gotten was the 2019 season, had 4,902. I think that we're going to go over again here, Michael, because as much as I know you would love to give some props to the New York Ifers, I don't think you can get there. The Jets at plus 750 to win 14 or more regular season games. Is it possible?
It's only plus 750?
Yeah.
The Ifers to get to 14 wins is only, that means they're 14-3 and it's you're only getting plus 750? Stormy. I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, are you serious? Like, that's it. That's not fair. That number should be plus 1500. It shouldn't it?
Listen, Michael, they think they have the best defense in the National Football League. They have a three-time MVP who's coming back. He's going to be healthy despite that age. They don't care. They got the weapons. They got the talent. They got everything, Michael. If they stay healthy, plus 750, you don't want to take it?
Ifers?
I don't either, but still.
Are you going to tie up your money with the Ifers?
I can't
do
it.
To think they're going to win 14 just to get 750 back?
I told you, Michael, I'm not doing this to myself again in general. I have not, and I will not, bet anything Jets over, anything Jets positive, any futures
Ifers.
Awards.
They're the Ifers. They're no longer the Jets.
It.
We'll keep the color green and white, but we're going to keep them. They're the Ifers.
Yeah. It's not even the season yet, and we're already saying just end the season. That's just how I feel. Okay. Big Ten. Could a Big Ten team win the NCAA tournament this year? Plus 550, the last league title, Michigan State in 2000. It has been a hot minute.
I mean, do you see how he worded this? It's so brilliant. You know, the man's
smooth.
A wordsmith. He wants me to answer the Purdue question, right? Without putting Purdue in it, right? You know, he wants me to go there because, you know, that's kind of what, you know, Purdue. I think you could get me to say why not at plus 50, 550. I think I could say why not to that. We break the streak.
It's not because of Illinois. It's not because, but you see, you're
could
not.
Be.
Give,
it could
you're,
be
I was
Illinois,
you're,
but
you're
I think he had his mind. I think he had his mind set more. I think he had his mind set more on Purdue with this question.
Well, that's why we're steering away with Elliot from Purdon't. It's Purdue, Sir Elliot. So that's the new thing that's been working its way around here in the control room. Okay, all right. We finally got a why not. We finally got one. It happened. Can we go 2 for 2 as we close things out? We talked a lot earlier at the start of the hour about the New England Patriots and the dynasty conversation. We also talked about how many reps they have out at Jaden Daniels Pro Day and will have tomorrow for Drake Mays. Could you say why not to the New England Patriots in year one of the new era under Gerard Mayo to make the playoffs 8-1, bet 100, win 800, Michael?
I could say why not to that because, remember, I felt like there was a lot of games they had a chance to win last year that they didn't win. I can't say why not if they keep the same kicker, but they change quarterbacks. Now, they haven't made the move on the kicker, so we'll see. But, look, anything's possible if they get the right quarterback, right? If Drake May goes 2 and they get Jaden Daniels at 3, he could make them a much better team, so why not? But, you know, this is before the draft. I think we need to revisit this after the draft.
Michael, I'm just going to throw this in. What about the Ifers to make the playoffs? It's actually minus 135. It's a minus number for the Jets to make the playoffs.
I would. You and I both know they're not going to make the playoffs. They're not going to stay healthy.
I told
you,
Aaron Rodgers is going to get hurt again. Tyrod Taylor is going to be hurt, and you're going to be stuck with another Zach Wilson experience. I can just read it in the stars.
Oh, you know, write this down, Elliot. You know this is going to happen. The girl's right. She's absolutely 1,000. We're going to see this return of Zach Wilson, and it would be like a Netflix documentary. He could come back and lead the Jets back to promised land. Wouldn't that be perfect? Huh?
Oh, goodness. And that documentary, Michael, would give the truth equal to both sides, right? Hear everybody's side of the story in that one while we're on documentaries.
That's right. Instead of the infomercial that we're witnessing. Yes, exactly.
Awesome show as always, Michael. You're the best. We'll be back tomorrow talking again more pro days. We'll see what comes out of Jaden Daniels pro day. We got Drake May, Michael Penix tomorrow. So lots of draft talk, lots more NFL news and notes that has come out of Orlando in the NFL owners meetings. But this was fun. Enjoy your day, everybody. Patrick Maher and the Sharp Money crew coming up next on VSiN and more great content on DraftKings Network as well. See you later.